and welcome back to Book Buzz with Jen and Peng, a podcast where we talk about romance books, our current reads, and we also have the pleasure of sitting down with some of our favorite authors and chatting with them about their amazing books.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. You know, I feel so bad saying this because we say it after every podcast and we're like, we're going to be back next week. We're going to be back. Our apologies. It's just been very busy. Like, I feel like January has drained me.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's just, I feel so drained. And then we're trying to get some stuff sorted out with our box. So that was very mind draining too, which we'll talk more about that later on, because we are going to be making some changes and some stuff. It's exciting stuff. But welcome back. We are so excited for a new episode because today we have the pleasure and honor of interviewing Corinne Michaels again. Mm-hmm. Corinne Michaels was the very first author we interviewed when we started our podcast 2 years ago. And mm-hmm. like we said, it felt like we were messed. We were scared. We were nervous. We were like, I don't know, like we didn't know what to expect. Like, don't get us wrong, like, Corinne was phenomenal, but us behind the scenes were, like, so nervous.
Yes.
And I remember Corinne said something the first time we interviewed. She said, no, don't be nervous. Just go mm-hmm. with it. Something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was so nerve-wracking, but we are so happy to have her back again after 2 years, and especially talk about Keep This Promise. Keep mm-hmm. This Promise is the third and final book in the Rose Canyon series, which in my opinion is one of my favorite series to date of Corinne. Keep This Promise has to be my favorite book of the series. And then Help Me Remember. And then Give Me Love. Help Me Remember would be one, but Holden is gold. Like, I just love him so much. Mm-hmm. But we're going to be talking to her about Keep This Promise, Rose Canyon series. And then we're also just going to be diving into what's coming up this year with her. And mm-hmm. we are so excited. So please stick around and grab some coffee. I have mine ready. And I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Corinne, thank you for joining us today. We're so happy to have you back on our podcast. You're the first author we interviewed, and having you back is definitely an honor.
I was the first?
Yes.
I popped your cherry.
Yes, you did.
So now we're not as awkward and clueless as we were, 2 years ago?
Yeah. I
don't think you guys were awkward and clueless.
We feel awkward. We didn't know what to do.
You're like, now we've figured this out, and now we're about to hammer you hard. You know, I'm starting to feel like maybe I should reschedule.
So how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm just geared up and trying to stay focused because I still have to write a book, and yet I'm trying to get ready for release, and I'm really excited about it. So I'm really feel very kind of like I'm split in like three different places. I posted about on my Instagram and a couple other places, my dog had to have pretty major surgery. So she's getting up like every 4 hours from her medications. So I'm like not sleeping. And then I'm trying to write and do 100 other things to get ready. So I think this is good though. I needed to kind of come down to focus. So I'm excited to get to talk to you guys so that I can maybe recondense my brain.
How is the puppy though?
She's good. She's doing really good. Just, you know, normal post-surgery stuff, I guess. But it's going to be a very long 8 weeks. That's all I'm going to say.
For 8 weeks, you're going to have to give her medicine for every 4 hours?
No. Like, this should only last maybe another week, they said. The medicine part of it, and then we can go to like a little bit less and less and less, like as she progresses we can go less and less on the meds, but she's not allowed to run, play, jump for 8 weeks.
Oh.
So I'm sure you can imagine how fun that's going to be for a puppy.
Yep.
So since you're about to release Keep This Promise, how did you come up with Holden and Sophie's story?
I don't know. I mean, it definitely wasn't what it was supposed to be. Like, when I sat down to plot out the series, it's very funny because the whole series is, if I showed you like the original series, and I don't plot, but like I kind of like come up with, okay, this story is going to be this, this story is going to be this, this one's going to be this. These are their names, and that's pretty much all I know. I know the tropes and I know that. So originally, the book one was going to be Give Me Love, and that was going to be Emmett and Addison. And then book two was going to be Spencer and Brielle, but Brielle would have had to have been in a coma for like 3 years, you know, or like two, a year. It just, and then book three was going to be Holden and his ex-wife. So originally, that was how I really wanted the series to be. It was going to be like a marriage, rekindled marriage for Holden. And I started writing Give Me Love as Give Me Love that I planned as, not the Give Me Love that we read now. And I was like, how am I going to keep this girl in a coma long enough for any of this to be realistic? And then I was like, and if she comes out of the coma, like, I can't just be like the soap operas where it's like I open my eyes and everything's fine, you know, because I'd get called to the carpet on that one. So I had a really hard time trying to figure out how to make the series work in the way that I thought in my head it should work, because I wanted Brielle to wake up and even more of the world she knew to have been trapped. Like, could you imagine this girl waking up and not only not knowing any of the things she knew about her life, but then her sister-in-law is married to somebody else? You know what I mean? It just would have been like this total mind fuck. and then I started writing Give Me Love, and I realized none of it could work. And so I shuffled the series around, and I still had plans for Holden to be what Holden in my head was going to be. And I just didn't like it. And this happens a lot with me. Like, I start to plot or I start to go in and I'm like, okay, this something's not right. And then once I realize what it is that's not right, I can start going again. Like, if I'm stuck, it's because there's something wrong and I just have to figure out what the wrong is. So that was why I shuffled it around. So how I came up with Holden and Sophie's story is really very organic. It's just kind of how the stories in the first book, especially like when Emmett became who Emmett became. And then I realized like he needed a Blakely. And then as that progressed and I was like, okay, now I need something. And I knew that the suspense was really going to be the key to who Holden ended up with. So that's really where it kind of come from too, is I knew I needed I needed things to happen the way that they were going to happen. And for that, he couldn't end up back with his ex-wife. And honestly, I didn't want him to. I wanted him to have, like, the Vegas stuff for me was so funny in the book, in book one and two, was like, you know, I thought it was just really cute and funny. And then I was like, what if, you know, and that was honestly how Sophie became Sophie.
So how far, like, when did you change your mind on which books you were going to, like, the order was going to go from?
So I would say pretty quickly. I think I got maybe like 10,000 words into Give Me, like, the what would have been Help Me book one. Mm-hmm. And I was like, none of this is going to work, because I couldn't just flash forward a period of time and have Addison, like, I really wanted to show Addison healing from finding, like, and so I wrote the first, like, what actually ends up being the bonus scene at the end of Help Me Remember was the opening to what the book originally would have been, which is why I wrote it in Isaac's POV, because I wanted you to see him go through it. You know what I mean? And then, and again, like, I wrote all these things and then I was like, none of this makes, like, I can't make this work. in this order. So I changed it, and I'm really glad I did, because I feel like the series is exactly as it should have been, you know, if I wanted to write the way I wanted to write, because I really wanted to write Amnesia. I don't know why, but I was like dead set that I had to write an Amnesia trope. And then I realized everyone hates Amnesia. So it was super fun.
I personally, okay, so help me remember when I read it, I was like, Corinne cannot top this. Like, it, I love that book. That plot twist with the ring, it killed me. I was like, Corinne, I hate you. Oh my God. Like, it was the worst. But I felt like the way you did it, it felt so, it didn't feel rushed. It didn't feel random. It didn't feel like everything in the backstory was out of place, which I think that's what made it work, to where I don't think I've read many Amnesia books. And I feel like when we read that book, me and Ping were discussing that we don't read a lot of books. And it's not also something that calls my attention, because I'm like, I hate when like people don't know what like what they've done or whatever. But it's like this one fits so well.
I did not realize like how many people really just don't like the Amnesia trope. And I think it's because it is exactly what you said, right? Like, why can't they just tell her everything? Why can't this just be like this? Like, why is this happening? And when I started really researching Amnesia and how it works and the brain and how the brain heals and the whole thing, because the amount of research I have to do for most of, when I write these kind of crazy things is nuts. Which is why I really just would like to stay in one version of my life. But, you know, I think that was the difference with the way Help Me Remember ended up playing out, is so people were like, there was a really good reason why. And it wasn't that she didn't know anything. It was what she didn't know and where her gaps happened. And then the way her brain played tricks on her, you know, I mean, I think that was really, I don't know. I feel like that was the way it had to have gone. And if I had done it the other way, right? Like had I had written it backwards the way it originally had planned, I don't know that any of that could have made any sense. I mean, none of it. It would have been a totally different book.
Has it always happened? Well, how does it work to where I feel, because whenever you released Help Me Remember, you had the blurbs or somewhat what the book, the second and the third one was going to be about. Have you ever, let's say, gotten to, you already have the blurb, have it on your website. Have you ever gone to like book two and then say, oh, I don't want it. I don't want that.
I don't know. Have I? I mean, the one book everyone asks me for every single time in Willow Creek Valley.
Yes.
I mean, yes. Yes, I have. I mean, I don't know. It's so hard for me because like as a reader, I 150,000% understand. I have one of my favorite authors who made this quote unquote series that I am obsessed with. I love it so much. It's historical. And she wrote two of the sisters. And I was like, where the hell's the third and fourth sister? There's five sisters. Like, where the hell are the rest of them? Like, I don't understand. And we got like one of them, and then the other two are just married and we don't read their stories, which is fine. As an author, I'm like, I get it. She just didn't think they had good enough stories. So she made them married and everything was fine. But in book one, she really set it up that you're going to get these five sisters. But so I get it as a reader, right? Like I was like desperate for these three other books and we didn't get them. So I don't know. I guess there have been plenty of times where I've realized it. And that's where I guess I kind of say how if there's something wrong and I can't move forward in a book, it's because there's something that I need to fix. And in Willow Creek Valley, Alex was the issue. And as soon as I fixed that I was not going to write his book, I was able to write the rest of that book within 30 days. Mm-hmm. It was as soon as I removed the mental demand that I had to write this man's book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you got rid of the pressure of your head couldn't move on from how is he going to be? What's going to happen? And your mind was stuck because you were just freaking out about it. But it's funny because do you still get messages on that?
Every day. Every day. at least on one platform, not like an email every day, not on Facebook every day, but like Instagram this morning was like, hey, I'm reading Willow Creek Valley and I totally love this book. Where's Alex's book? And I'm like, oh, burn the house down. What I always tell everybody is, I could have killed him and I probably should have. And I didn't, because I did not want to cause like emotional trauma for the sake of emotional trauma. There's just no reason to do it. And I regret it every day.
Well, I'm kind of glad you didn't though, because I don't know.
I don't think I would have, I didn't need it. The story didn't need it. So I'm glad I didn't do it, because the story truly genuinely did not need that to happen. It just would have made the questions much less, but hopefully people understand. Like, I think once I tell them or they read why and they see it at the end, like why
they understand.
Yeah. It's just getting them to keep going and understand that like, it's okay.
So for going back to Keep This Promise. So when I read it, it was very, I remember when I finished, help me remember, I messaged you. I was like, I went to your story, because at the end of the book, it says pre-order the next book. So I think I went there and I read the blurb or the summary of what Keep This Promise was going to be about. And I messaged you and I was like, why does Holden's book have to be the last one? Like, because I was so freaking excited for it. So for him, like, I feel like you build up his story from the very beginning to where we see this guy, like you said, struggling with the marriage, struggling with just everything that was happening. And then he was also a guy who kept repeating, I'm not going to settle down, I don't want kids, to where, boom, he, you know, instantly his whole world shifts upside down. And yeah, the thing about him that I loved, and I even told you when I was reading the book, it's like, he is hands-on, like on board from the very beginning. Like, and they keep questioning, his friends are like, are you sure, you know, how sure are you that this is real? And he's like, don't question me, like, I know, yeah, it's real, either you trust me or you don't, etc.
Right, like, this is not your life, this is not your choice, this is mine, and I'm here for this.
And I felt like that made me love him more, because he didn't question it one bit. He was, you know, he took that responsibility and that role of protectiveness towards them, yeah, in a heartbeat. So how was it diving into that mindset to where you're changing this character's mind to where, I don't want a relationship, I don't want a family, to they are my whole world and I'll do anything for them?
Well, I think that really the shift happens when you have a child, right? Like, a lot of parents will say that, like, the minute they place that baby in your arms, your entire life changes. And I feel like that was what Holden's moment was. Like, yeah, he didn't want it. He wasn't looking for it. He didn't want a family. He'd already been married. He'd already failed at that. So that was like, and for Holden's character, where like failure is not an option, he's a doctor, his entire life is all about like making things right and making the right decisions, right? And so he marries Jenna, and, you know, his marriage falls apart very, very early in their marriage too. It's not even, you know, it's not like they were married 10 years or 20 years. Now, I think that the reason Holden didn't want those things is because he's already failed at those things. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have a choice. This wasn't his choice. This was what happened. And so I feel like for him, it was like, yeah, I didn't want this, but now I have this, and I'm either going to be the man that I am, or I'm going to walk away from my responsibilities. And that's not who he is. He's the guy that moved back to Rose Canyon to take care of his ailing aunt. He's the man that, you know, family and responsibility, because of how shitty his childhood was, is everything to him. So he will never repeat the behaviors of his parents. And I think that was really the catalyst to why he is the way he is. I think that when you have a guy that had that kind of upbringing, you know, he will never do that again. So to have done anything else would have been a slap in Sophie, it not just, you know, in Sophie's face, but really, I think that would have been more Eric out of character than him kind of saying in the other two books, like, I don't want this. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like at his core, he's a protector. At his core, he's a fixer. At his core, he wants to be this good man. So, you know, I feel like a lot of the times with characters, right, I always call them unreliable narrators, right? Like, we say things that we don't mean as human beings. And, you know, when you're writing, your characters will say, I don't want this. Or the characters will say, I don't like cheese, when then they go home and eat a block of cheese, right? Like, they're unreliable narrators because they want you to hear what you want to hear, or they want to say what they really don't want. So that's kind of where I always kind of go from, you know, I look at almost any of my heroes. They don't want what they have, what they end up getting in the beginning.
And I feel like with Holden, he was very, I loved him, but he was also your, well, I, like, this has one of your steamiest scenes you've ever written.
Yeah.
But I felt like he was very, like, it took me by surprise how he was, because I didn't picture in my head that he was, because I was like, I was reading that, I was like, well, excuse me. But it was like something that it was like so out of nowhere to where it still fit the character.
Yeah.
But it took you by surprise, because I never saw that coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also, like, at that point where the first one of those happens, he's distraught. I mean, like, you see, he's falling apart. Yeah. I mean, he is literally broken. So I think that was where that came from, was like, when you're stripped down of all the abilities to control yourself and to be whatever. I don't know.
And like I said, this had one of, like, the steamiest scenes that I think you've ever written. Yeah. How was that for you to work? Because I felt like your scenes are always a little bit more toned down, which they fit, because I'm like, it's a small town. Like, I don't want to, like, small towns, you usually don't have, like, freaking hardcore scenes like that. But I felt like this one had a little bit more steam than your usual ones. How was that for you, diving into that?
Fun. It was fun. I mean, I enjoyed, like, I'm not saying, I don't know. It reminded me of, like, the Jackson time when I wrote Jackson. Like, Jackson was dirty talking. Jackson was, you know, straddle my face. Jackson was, you know, I mean, like, that's that he was. He was like that alpha, you know, slap your ass kind of guy. So I think it was just, it was nice. It was fun. It was fun to write. It was really fun to have my hero be a little bit more than what I've maybe had before. And not because they weren't that way before, but just because I didn't write it. Like, I just, it didn't fit. This one, I felt like it fit, and I let it go, and I was like, all right, here we go.
It's always the quiet ones.
It is, right? Dude, it's always the ones you least expect, and you're like, okay.
Could you see yourself, future books, writing more steamy scenes?
I think so. I mean, I don't know, more steamy scenes, but more steamier scenes.
Yeah,
I don't know that. Like, I mean, this next one that I'm writing very much fits the, you know, it fits. Mm-hmm. So if it fits, I'll go with it. But if it doesn't, I'm not going with it. You know, but I also think that was why it was so important for Holden and Sophie to have that really, really sweet scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not always just in, you know, in any relationship, it's not always one thing or the other.
Yeah.
Unless you're writing BDSM, and then, yeah, it's always, but I don't write BDSM, so.
Can you imagine Corinne Michaels?
No. Right.
I'd be, like, so scared to dive into
I would really be scared, because, like, I don't think I could ever. I think that she would be, no. No, it's just never going to happen. I mean, it's like every time I say I want to write a rom-com, like, it's just never going to happen.
So, if you had to describe Holden in three words, what would those three words be?
Protective is the first word that comes to mind. Responsible. like he's his responsibility, responsible. And I'm like, I know there's a better word for like all or nothing. Like he is all or nothing. He's, if he loves you, he loves you. If he doesn't, then that's that. But like, he's all or nothing.
I think that's why I loved him so much, because he was like, he also went on Sophie's pace. And it was like, he even told her, you call the shots, like, we're going at the pace that you want to, which I was like, oh my God, his like goals. I love, love Liam and I love Connor, but I'm just like, there's something about Holden that I'm just like, the way he went throughout the whole situation to where finding out he had a daughter, and him being the way he was as protectiveness was amazing. Like, he wasn't scared, because whenever Sophie showed up and told him what was going on, like, he never, you know, he never questioned it. He took them in. He's like, I'll protect you, which I think was his biggest thing, to where he was protected from the very beginning.
I think there's a line where he says something to Sophie, because she's like trying to figure out why Theo wouldn't tell her, or something like, why would he send me here, like, kind of thing. And I think that there's a line where he says, like, who else, there was nowhere else he could have sent you, like, no one else will protect a man the way he will for his child, like, right? Like, there's like a line, it's something like about protecting, like, why he would have been sent there. And I think that that was really accurate too in my mind on why Holden was the way he is. Like, a parent, a good parent, a parent who loves their child will do anything. They will risk, they will kill, they will die for that child. Like, that child's life is more valuable than your own. And I think that that was why you love Holden so much. Like, I think that's why I love Holden so much. I think that's why anybody will love Holden so much, is because he puts the needs of his, the people he loves, above himself. That's what a hero does.
You come up, because I feel like every, okay, so with your books, there's situations that happen that it does, it feels like every book that you read from you, like when I'm reading them, it doesn't feel repetitive. So like, stuff happens, like, you know, for example, Connor, we had that, the whole plot with the husband was abusive. We had other situations, like with the Help Me Remember, she had amnesia, etc. How do you come up with all these plots to where they're like, how much do you plan when you're setting the plot? Like with Theo, like, I, like that whole situation in the beginning of Keep This Promise was like freaking me out, because I was like, what's going on? Like, what is he into? And then I felt bad, because I was like, why does she always have to kill someone in her books? And it hurts.
I know. So you asked, so like, how much do, how do I keep it different? I don't know. I don't really plan. I know, like, for this series, this next series, I know, like, the four books, I know the four siblings, I know where they live, I know who they're going to end up with. And that's about it. I mean, I know, like, with book one, what the trauma is, like, what will be the issue for them. And I don't really know how I'm going to get there. With help with this, with Rose Canyon series specifically, because it was so suspense driven, I definitely had to have more eggs, like ducks in a row, than I normally would, which is why I think it was harder for me to write. Because I knew I had to have these things happen for the dominoes to fall correctly, right? Like, in order for that to have happened, all of these things have to happen. So I was really grateful that I wrote ahead of the release of the next book, because I did have to go back into Give Me Love before Pang knows. I, like, she had read it early with, for me, and she was like, no, I didn't really believe this. And like, no, I don't know. I didn't think that. I was like, okay. And then I went back in and I had to add stuff to it to make that work for the next book. So I think that there was like, there's a benefit to that when I was writing, with writing suspense. I had to make sure that my my pieces moved correctly. So there was a lot more, like, it was funny because at the end of book two, because I still hadn't really figured out how book three was going to play out. Like, at the end of book two, I really still didn't know who was, like, the ringleader. Like, I knew there was a ringleader. I just really hadn't figured out fully how that ringleader was going to tie and make sense. And then it was maybe about a week before Give Me Love released, and I was like, I know how I'm going to do this. And I went back and I adjusted it so I knew that it would make sense. If that makes any sense. I don't know if I even answered your question, but, like, the suspense made it more that I had to really plan. This next series, I don't really have a plan because it's small town. It's back to, like, my, back to my jam, like, back to my heart. But I think I'll write more suspense. Like, I do love suspense. Like, I loved writing it. So I do think that, like, I might do my, you know, small town emotional damage books. And then, although I don't know, this series is not really emotional damage. I'm actually kind of excited. Like, it's a lot. I don't want to say it's light because it's not a light book. I'm sure nobody else will agree with me. But it's not. Like, it's not dealing with some of the stuff we dealt with in the Arrowwoods, or it's probably more like Willow Creek Valley. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, it's got its whatever, but it's not like, how bad can I hurt you?
How much can I make you cry?
How many boxes of tissues does that
mean? And that's what I was also, we wanted to ask you, because this series is more, it has a lot of suspense in it. To yep. Where I feel like you start the book and it starts already very suspenseful. It ends in a cliffhanger and you're like, oh my freaking God. So it's like it goes from one thing to another. How was it writing? Because it felt different than your other books in that sense of it had suspense played a big role in it.
Yeah.
How was it? Was it harder than your usual books? Or how was it getting your mindset ready for those scenes?
I don't know. It was harder to write because, again, the pieces have to fit, right? Like, if I add some random thing in there, like, it doesn't make sense later on. So there was I probably revised more in these books than I have in a really long time. Because I had to. But it was really fun because I got to all of the tension that you kind of talk about, like where you're saying it feels different. It's because it's not what horrible thing the couple is going through, right? Like, it's not about them losing a baby or not being able to have a child or, mm-hmm. you know, any of the other horrible things I've done to people, to my characters. It's really about what's being done to them mm-hmm. from an outside source, right? Like, it's the tension and the angst and the plot and the whole thing is driven by an outside. It's not about them. There is no third act breakup in any of those three books. Mm-hmm. Maybe Help Me Remember, I guess you could call that one. But, like, Give Me Love, they don't break. Like, that's it. They don't break up, right? Like, what happens is what causes
mm-hmm.
whatever. Same thing in this one, right? Like, they don't break up. They're together. Like, when she shows up at the door, like, that's it, right? Like, they're kind of yeah. together from almost day one. They don't break up. There's no, like, this is better for us. There is none of that because their trials and tribulations come from the outside. Mm-hmm. So that's what I enjoyed a lot. So I don't know, maybe there'll be a serial killer in the next book. So I don't
oh
know.
My God. Who knows?
You're welcome.
So without any spoilers or so, which scene was the hardest for you to write?
Hardest for me to write. Like, hardest emotional or hardest just in general?
For Keep This Promise.
Chapter one was actually, like, I cried when Theo You know, I cried with Theo and Sophie. That scene with Theo and Sophie, I really did. I cried because I imagined my best friend, you know, trying to protect me, and my best friend forcing me to leave that room. Like, I couldn't get Sophie to get out, right? Like, there was so many parts where Sophie's like, I'm not leaving you. Like, I don't know how else to say this. And she, you know, I think that that was the hardest to write, because I knew Sophie had to get out of that room, because she has to protect her daughter. And yet she's dealing with her husband, like her husband, who's her best friend. And they're not really married in the sense of like typical marriage, but that was hard. That was the hardest scene, I think.
From all the books that you've written, all the books that you've broken our hearts with, which one has made you cry?
So
while many. You were writing it.
Well, I mean, I talk about Say You'll Stay, you know, when I wrote, so Say You'll Stay is a very personal story for me because it happened to somebody I love very much. So I wrote Say You'll Stay on a plane, going to Dallas to a signing in Dallas. And, at one point the flight attendant came over to like check on me because I was crying so hard in my chair. And she was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "I just killed him." Like, I'm like literally like tears and like snot dripping down my face. And she's like, my girlfriend was sitting in front of me in the row in front of me. She turns on, she's like, "In a book, she's writing a book. It's okay." She's like, "Did you read what that next time?" But I listened to Ave Maria while I wrote that scene. So I don't know if you've ever listened to Pentatonix's version of Ave Maria. And I cried so hard in that scene. And then in Wyatt's book, I sobbed like big, ugly, snotty tears. That series for me was very difficult. But you know what? I think I've cried in almost all of them. There's a few I haven't cried in for sure. But like Beloved was my first book. And there's a letter that she gets. And I probably like was curled on a ball. Because Beloved is a very personal, my dad left when I was 9. That like the prologue to that book is literally my 9th birthday, like exactly what happened in my 9th birthday. So I feel very like personally tied to that book in a lot of ways. So I cried because I get Catherine on a very deep level, which is why I think when people are like, "I hate Catherine, she's so whiny," I'm like, but is she?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm whiny then, I guess. There's a lot of me in the book, or at least a lot of me 10 years ago in that book. So I don't know. I think Say You'll Stay is the first one that comes to mind where I like literally ugly, snot nosed, teared, cried so hard I couldn't breathe. Yeah. I don't know. Which one did you cry the most in?
I think Liam's book.
Really? What about you, Pang?
I feel like Say You'll Stay and those books, I feel like I read it too long ago that I don't really remember that well.
Yeah.
But the ones that I've cried the most for is probably Could Have Been Us and The One For Me. I believe those two books.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boxes of Tissues. I really hearted too.
Yeah.
I'm going to come up with a t-shirt that says Justice for Liam.
What in the world? Okay, sure. Justice for Liam.
Which one of your characters are the ones that people like mention the most?
Liam? Oh, yeah. Liam, like I can name one from every series, like Liam from the Salvation series, hands down. Wyatt from the Henningtons. Noah from One Last Time. Connor in the Arrowwoods, which is funny because Sean's my favorite, but I get it, whatever, sure. It's really funny though. Willow Creek Valley, it's either Oliver or Jack. I think that Jack probably gets it a little bit more, but I don't know. I've honestly, like, that series kind of confounds me because everybody loves the books for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Like, they love the they love Stella in Could Have Been Us. They love Grayson in Return to Us. They love Delia, and they love Oliver. Like, it kind of, like, does this weird, like, up and down thing with who they gravitate towards. In my mind, Could Have Been Us as my favorite in that one. And A Chance for Us. I do love Oliver. Like, I love Oliver so much. So, I don't know. But anyway, yeah. And then in this series, I don't know. I really don't know. Because I really thought it would have been Emmett over Spencer, but it's Spencer over Emmett, and then we'll see with Holden. I think
Spencer, he was, I love him.
I know.
Forgotten. You know, when I read that book, because I believe you had released the blurb, and me and Payne have talked about this. You released the blurb like a while before the book released. And when I first started reading the book, I was like, I did not go back and reread the blurb. I was like, who the heck is the hero in this book?
Yep.
And I was like, I refuse to go read the blurb. I refuse to skip ahead and figure out who it is. And then you get to his point of view, and yeah, you're like, oh my freaking God.
Like, I think that way, that opening, I will never forget writing that chapter. Like, I will never, ever in my life forget writing that chapter. Because I was like, I remember my whole body being tense and, like, anxiously, like, dying to start typing. Because I write in order. Mm-hmm. So I was to this point where I was like, I need this to happen now. And I remember talking to Melanie Harlow, and I was like, I don't want to hold back anymore. She's like, so just write it. And I was like, okay. Like, it was like, she gave me permission. I was like, okay. And yeah, I really, really had a good time with that. And I think that's the other thing I love about this series is that Mel and I did a little crossover for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, I enjoyed that with this series, and that added another layer of difficulty in writing as well. Because now I had to worry about her characters and the weather, because she writes about, like, what, how cold it is and stuff, and I don't. I'm like, no, it's summer all the time. Always living in the summer.
That is true. Like, your books are always sunshine and rainbows. Like,
I don't want to talk about the snow. This one had a snow scene because she was like, can we do this in January? And I was like, no. And she's like, why not? And I was like, because I don't want to. I gotta write about coats and hats. She's like, what's the problem with coats and hats? And I was like, what's right about putting on a coat and a hat? She's like, you're ridiculous. So I had to, like, I had to move my timeline to fit so that Zach could take Sophie.
When you're writing a series of 5-4 books, do you create a timeline as you're writing each book? That way, whenever you have to go back, or do you literally have to go back every single time to make sure that the timeline fits?
So I will say the most challenging time I've ever had to do that with timeline was the Willow Creek Valley series, because they overlapped. Remember, like, so you ended Return to Us, and then Could Have Been Us opens before any of that shit happened.
Yeah.
So I was writing literally on top, like a timeline on top of each other, each book. So I had to make sure that the character in book 2 was where she was supposed to be, and then the character in book 3 is going to be where they're supposed to be. So it was an absolute nightmare. That was really difficult. This one was a little bit easier timelining wise, because the stories start where the one left off.
Yeah.
So it's like all just happening in a successional line. So that was a little bit easier. I'll probably do the same thing going forward. I don't think I'll ever write on top of each other the way I did with Willow Creek Valley. That was really, that was, but it was more because, like, right, so I got to Stella's book and I was like, well, I can't just start this here. Mm-hmm. You have to know all the shit that happened before. Otherwise, who cares about this?
Mm-hmm.
But Stella's book was another one of those, wouldn't it be funny? Anytime that comes out of my mouth, y'all, it's not going to be funny. I just want to, like,
really. But with Stella's book, I think you did it so well because the scenes we would see her in other books, then when you got to her book, you're like, oh my God, like, this really was happening. And it actually, like, it went so smooth that you look back at those scenes that you had read before, you're like, I had no idea.
Uh-huh. Like the scene where Jack shows up drunk at Grayson's door.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right? So you think what he's talking about, and then you find out in Stella's book what that scene actually was so fun. Now, again, I never planned any of that. I want to be crystal freaking clear. I had no intention of that actually being, I absolutely did not know that was going to be what it was. Because I got to the end, like, I got to the end of Return to Us, and I was like, what the hell is the reason these two can't be together? Who gives a shit if that's his brother's best friend? Who cares? For a me book, to be an authentic Corinne book, like, I felt like there's no good freaking reason why these two fools can't be together. Who cares about her brother? Who gives a shit? She's 30%. You know, and that was how I felt, right? So I felt like there was no good reason. So I had to give them a really good reason. And that was when I said, like, God, wouldn't it be funny if she really had a kid that no one knows about?
That took me by surprise, by the way. I was like, what in the world? Yeah. I scream, you don't hear it, but I scream at you like almost in every book.
Do you really?
I do.
But I feel like this was the most vocal I've heard you in a while with Keep This Promise. Like, you were messaging me like, oh my God.
I loved it. I loved Holden. And then it was funny because I think I even messaged you like at 2 a.m. I was like, oh my freaking God.
Yeah. But it makes me happy because, you know, so many times, like, in my mind, it works really well, but then you don't always know if it's going to go over so well on the other side. So
when you're reading, like, I trust you, like, a lot, because I feel like you're literally one of my top small town authors. Like, in my mind and in my heart, you could do no wrong. Even though you kill me and you make me cry and you make me literally scream at my Kindle, but it's like, you're a must read author, I think, for me and Pink. Aww. So it's like, even though, like, you destroy us every single book, like, I'm nervous about your next series.
You shouldn't be. Well, I shouldn't say that. God only knows. Because, you know what? Like, here's what's probably going to happen. Like, I have this all plotted out. I really love where the story is going. I've got all this happening. And I know that what's going to happen is I'm going to be like, wouldn't it be funny? And those words are going to come out of my mouth at some point. And I'm pretty sure that, like, it's so funny because, you know, like, Mel knows the plot. And I've talked about it with, like, a few other of my friends. And I'm like, I don't know, guys. I just don't feel like there's anything super sad. And they're like, you don't need anything super sad. Like, it's really okay to not have anything super sad. I'm like, but wouldn't it be, like, more me? And they're like, yeah, maybe, like, you a little bit less you would be a good idea for a change. So that's what I'm trying for. I don't want to write light. I can never write light. Like, it's going to be like the situation is mm-hmm. whatever. I enjoyed the suspense and I enjoyed having the conflict come from outside. So that's really what I think it's going to be more. This series isn't going to be super sad. It's not. But the tension and the angst comes from outside sources.
I love angst.
I'm really excited. It's my first really. So, like, it's so funny. Somebody messaged me the other day on Instagram and they're like, do you have any age gap books? Because, like, age gap is my kryptonite. And I'm like, well, help me remember. It's technically an age gap, but no one seems to ever think it's an age gap book.
What's the age gap on that one?
20, yeah, she's 24. She's 24 and he's 37.
Tell me why I never knew that.
Like, I apparently did a really shitty job letting everyone know what an age gap book that is. Because even my friend, like my one friend who reads all my books, she was like, how old is Brielle? And I was like, well, she's just out of school. Like, she's 24, 25. And she's like, and how old is Spencer? And I'm like, well, Isaac's 36, 37. So is Spencer. And she's like, you did a really bad job letting us all know that.
I literally, you do learn something new every day, because I had no idea that that was an age gap. And then that was their age difference.
Uh-huh. And so when I said that to, when I said it to her, I was like, well, it's an age gap book, but like nobody seems to know that. Like, including, like, I did a really bad job letting you know how young she is. But I figured, like, she's only been out of school for like the last thing she remembers is 3 years ago when she graduated high school. So she's like, or graduated college. So you graduate college at like 23?
Yeah. 22, 23. Okay, like, did you ever say how, like, the age gap between her and her brother, like how old her brother was?
I think I do. I think I say they're like 13 years difference or something. So I don't know. Maybe I just really didn't like click it correctly. I don't know.
I'm looking at the book and I'm like, maybe I should reread that this weekend.
I don't know. But so I told her and she was like, oh, well, then I'm totally going to read it. And I was like, so this next one, Forbidden Hearts, is 100% an age gap book. It's almost the same ages too. It's like, he's 37, but he's a single dad and he's the local sheriff. And she is, and we're back in Sugarloaf. And she is 24.
Maybe, you know how there's some book, like on some accounts and authors that do those little arrows when they.
Oh, I have them.
Oh, yeah. You should do one for Help Me Remember again. And like circle the age.
Like, y'all, no, for reals. Like, it really does have an age gap. I promise it has an age gap. Because I was like, oh, that'll be like super angsty. Like, he looked at her like this little kid. You know, she was like 13 and he's like 20. You know,
I don't know why in my head there the age gap was like 4 years.
I think Brielle's a very mature at that point in the book because she's so broken in what's happening to her that it's not like a cutesy age gap, right? Like, it's like an age gap, but it has to do with it's not about the age, it's about her memory loss. So I think that that's where no one really connects it, because you're focusing so much on the trauma she's dealing with.
That and she's very mature. So mm-hmm. I feel like I never, wow. I'm sure. Yeah.
I don't know if it's now because I have a 20-year-old and I see how stupid him and his friends are, that like I'm now able to write better 20-year-olds, because I got married at 19. I had my son at 21. So I was never your quintessential 20-year-old, right? Like, I was worrying about formula and diapers. My friends were getting drunk at frat parties. So I have a hard time writing really good 20-year-olds, which is why I don't write college-age kids mostly, because I don't know what that life was. I was a married military wife with an infant.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't my friends. I can remember, like, they were sending me pictures from like spring break and I'm like, here's baby.
They'll be sending you pictures of their dreams and you're like,
literally, look at my 21st birthday, I was pregnant with my son and we went and my doctor was like, you can have a glass of wine. It's your 21st birthday. You can go to the restaurant for a glass. I had a white wine spritzer because I wanted it watered down. And I wouldn't even drink the whole thing. Like, I had one sip and I was like, I'm going to kill my baby. I can't do this. So like my friends on their 21st birthdays are sending me keg stand photos. So like, I mean, look, we're all different 20-year-olds, but now I think that's why Brielle, like, that's why I like writing the 20-year-olds that are kind of a little bit more in a serious situation, because you don't have the choice of being young and dumb. You have to grow up really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm super excited because I really like this new family. And in Destined for Me, which is Hadley's novella, that's coming out in April. Mm-hmm. You get to meet the new family in there, and you also get to like hang out with the Arrowwoods again and the Henningtons.
So are we going to see a lot of Connor?
Yes, because he is her father.
I know, but you never really write LaVon. I just love Connor. Like, he's my favorite one. I
never really write what?
Because I feel like since he's technically a side character on this one, like, I'm scared. What if you do something to him?
I do. I give him prostate cancer.
Don't trust Corinne Michaels.
Do not trust Corinne. You should put that on a shirt.
That was about to say, can we have that as a t-shirt?
I do not trust Corinne Michaels. No, I promise you're fine. It's a novella. It's super fun. It's very, very sexy. Very, very sexy and fun.
Is it hard to write novellas? Because, yes. Like, I feel like, do you guys ever, well, for you, like, do you ever feel like, oh my God, maybe I can add this? No, but I can't because it's, like, it has to be shorter. Like, do you ever battle with that, or what's hard about it?
It's really, so it's hard to tell, like, a very thick story in a short time, right? Like, mm-hmm. So I just have to pare it down. So if I wanted to make Hadley have a miscarriage, that's not happening in a novella. Not that I wanted to, but I'm just saying, like, if I saw her story as evolving into something more serious, that's not happening in a novella. I liked Cooper's novella a lot because that was more suspense again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was like, who's stalking her? And then this one is enemies to lovers workplace. So it's really fun because they just can't stand each other. Like they were in college together. They hooked up in college and now they don't like each other. So it was fun because there's like all this like back fun stuff. So I feel like that, like the novellas are hard because you can't really tackle anything serious. And if you're a writer like me, that's typically where you're drawn to. So for me, but you know what? It might've been really good because then now going into writing Forbidden Hearts, I'm not like, I've kind of had to do that already. Like I had to put aside my need for emotional damage.
I'm excited. I can't wait. I love, love Hadley. So
I do too. Mm-hmm. I really do too. And I really am glad that I wrote this as the novella. Because
how did you pick that you were giving her a novella?
So I had written the Christmas scene as the bonus scene for Come Back For Me, where she comes home for Christmas with Caden. And I was like, okay, I could write this, but go back in time to show you what happened to get her there. Because I loved her, and I've had so many people ask for second generation series. I knew I wanted to go back to Sugarloaf, so I thought that would be a really good way to like kind of ease myself back into going back to the town. Because the problem is too, I mean, now Hadley's 20, 23, 24, 25. I can't remember how old she is. 25, I think. So they're all like now writing this series, writing the Sugarloaf series, my Arrowwood got, they're like aged 10 years. You know what I mean? Like everybody's older, and you're like right now the girl that Phoebe, my main character Phoebe, went to school with Beth Ann,
mm-hmm.
who's 2 years younger than Phoebe. So like when I have to math it out a little bit, it's different. Like the Arrowwoods aren't the Arrowwoods of now. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're the Arrowwoods like aged. Like time's moved.
They're still the same age as they were.
Yeah. I read the book. But in my head too. So I'm having to like, I don't know how much of the Arrowwoods will be in the books because mm-hmm. they're different now. And I have to be really but yet I don't know. I think I wrote myself in a pretty weird hole and I'm just hoping that nobody notices.
Nobody goes back and be like, wait a minute.
Yeah, because, you know, like Hadley's book had to take place so many years later. And then I wanted to introduce the new family, at least have their names mentioned. So now I'm like, well, shit, now I have to write them older. But then like Addison goes back to live with them. And I don't know if I talked about how old anybody was there. Like, I don't know what we're happening. We're just all going to suspend reality of time. This is where I say, nobody look at the math.
Because Addison was like 30 something, early 30s.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Addison now, I'm not aging her 10 years. Yeah. Like this is her story will be book two, I believe.
I'm so excited.
And so Addie will have her own, you know, she's at now, like I'm not aging her multiple years. Like maybe it'll be that, you know, cause I think a year goes by from the end of the beginning of Help Me Remember to the end of I'll Keep This Promise.
You're not doing any book signings this year, right?
Actually, I am because I'm an idiot. I am doing Vegas. I'm doing Love in Vegas. That just got announced yesterday. And I am doing...
Did I miss that announcement?
Yeah, I don't know. Ellie just... She just put it on a thing and someone caught it. And then it was like, wait a minute. Like, when did this happen? So, yeah. I signed up for that. And I think there'll be another announcement. I'm trying to think, what's the other one I'm doing? Readers on the River. I'm doing Readers on the River, which is in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm doing that one. I'm debating one other one, but I really don't think I can add it into my schedule with Emmy, with my daughter and her college stuff.
Well, I'll see you in Vegas, hopefully.
Yeah.
I wasn't going. I don't like Vegas. I just don't like Vegas at all. And I went to Vegas last year, and I came back so sick. Like, all that smoke, all that. It was crazy. I sounded like a freaking, I don't know. I would send paying voiceovers. I'm like, listen to my ugly voice.
I didn't go to the signing last year. Excuse me. Melanie and I decided we needed a girls trip, so we ran away and went to Vegas.
And like 2 weeks after.
Yeah. We did. And then so when we both came back and I was really sick and she was not. But it was crazy.
It's all that smoke. I literally came back and what was it, like 2 days later pain that I was like, I think I had the flu. I was diagnosed with the flu. I was like, stupid Vegas.
Well, so many people in such a small amount. The ventilation is terrible. So I'll probably stay across the street again.
Yeah, it was crazy. But we'll see you there.
So you guys are both coming back even after your dislike of Vegas.
I'm just going to like pack a bunch of medicine.
You know what you have to do, though? You have to, like, go do fun stuff off the strip. You have to, like, go do anything that you can. Like, when my husband and I go, we went for my birthday a couple of years ago, and I don't like Vegas. Like, I will be totally honest. It's not my favorite place. But we did, like, a helicopter ride into Grand Canyon, and then we went and, like, saw We went out to like Utah and went to the mountain. Like we took one of the excursion trips out there and we did a day out there. And it was the most fun we ever had. We got to like see stuff and go places. And it wasn't just about like the strip and Vegas. Like we went and did outside stuff. So I always tell everybody who hates Vegas, like, don't just stay in Vegas. Like Vegas is really awesome because there's so many, you can go on like Viator.com and like any of those travel whatever and you can pick excursions and go, they'll come right to your hotel, pick you up and take you.
I went to Vegas last year. I went because I wanted to see some authors, but I literally went because I ran on TikTok and I found this really pretty coffee shop, and I'm a coffee addict, like I love coffee, so I had to go because I wanted to go to that coffee shop. So I went because of that coffee shop.
Where was it?
I forgot the name, but it's like all pink and it's like they literally decorate your car. It was perfect. I loved it.
Okay, well, when we go, will you take me?
Okay. And then that owner has like, and I didn't get to go to that one and I want to go this year. they have a donut shop, and their donuts are like, I need to send you a picture of it. It's okay. Like, oh, I'm going there this year.
And then I'll take you to breakfast for an egg slut. I think Melanie eat one. And she, like, Mel was like, this is like, we're really going to wait in line for this. And I was like, yes, we're getting an egg slut.
I see that a lot on TikTok.
So we went, and she sent me a text the other day. She's like, I'm dreaming of an egg slut. Told you. It's so good. So good. So, yeah. But those are the only signings I'm doing as of now. I wanted to add Book Bonanza. I was like having major FOMO. I'm still having major FOMO. Why? Like, I've done every Book Bonanza since it started, and I'm like, oh. But it's literally the weekend after my daughter graduates.
Yeah.
And I'm probably still going to have people here.
I'm going to create, you know, those cardboard face. I'm going to walk around the signing with your face like
that. Do you know how many of my, the authors that would be there would probably pee themselves? It would be really fun. Like,
we're just haunting you. Do that. I'm seriously, I'm going to do you and Natasha, because Natasha's not coming either. I was like,
I know.
Like, are you not coming because Corinne's not coming?
That's probably why. She's obsessed with me.
I'm literally gonna make that. I'm gonna walk around with it right here, and I'm gonna, every picture that I take, I'm like, put you in the middle right here.
I will laugh.
So before we close all of this interview, how many books are you planning to release this year?
Okay. So keep this promise, counts in this year. Mm-hmm. And we have Destined for You, Destined for Me, which will be April. And then I think Forbidden Hearts is May or June. I can't remember. And then maybe one more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should, because May and June, that is barely half a year. You still have the rest of the year.
Honestly, I am not, like, this is what, like, my New Year's resolution is that I will not sacrifice my mental health anymore. Mm-hmm. I talked about it in my newsletter and several other places, but like, last August, I basically like just broke down and had like a full fledged nervous breakdown kind of feeling. I have to take care of myself better. And when you write emotional trauma and you don't heal afterwards and you go right into another emotional trauma book, I feel like I've been doing that for 10 years. I've just been like gliding through this emotional trauma books and not giving myself enough time in between or time to kind of recover. Which is maybe why I'm excited to not write some emotional trauma, which is why I wrote Suspense. Honest to God, it's really why I wrote the series. Why I wrote Rose Canyon was I just needed a break. And this was my way of like still writing, but not killing babies.
Well, you take care of you. Like, you come first. We're here to wait for your books. Perfection takes time. That's the way I see it.
I love that.
So we're here for whenever you release your books, and we are so grateful for you, and thank you so much for joining us again. We did, before we let you go, we wanted to do a this or that game, just to get to know you a little bit, and I'm curious about your answers too. One wrong one and I'm gonna be like, bye Corinne.
You can't do that. You can't like give me a ultimatum when you're gonna tell me to pick this or that. All right. Okay. One wrong answer and I'm off. Here we are. But can I just say real quick, I love you guys with like my whole heart. Thank you for always being like my biggest cheerleaders and champions. Like, you guys have been with me for so long and I adore you with everything in me. And I don't know, you guys make the book world a better place. So thank you. Thank you guys for being you. And thank you for having me.
And you make the book world a better place.
I wouldn't go that far, but I appreciate it. Okay. We'll see after this or that.
Don't fail me, Corinne. Okay. First one, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Ebook or paperback?
Audiobook. You failed me. I'm just kidding.
ebook or paperback?
Audiobook. Ebook then. Fine. Ebook, but it's really audiobook. I call an audible here.
Standalone or series?
Series.
Enemies to lovers or friends to lovers?
Friends to lovers.
Grumpy hero or sunshine hero?
I would say grumpy hero.
Small town or city?
Okay, what one?
Small town or city?
Duh, small town.
Couple cover or illustration cover?
I'm going to say illustration, but not illustrated. Mm-hmm. So like the Willow Creek Valley are illustrated, but they're not really.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Single point of view or dual point of view?
Oh, this is the worst question ever. I don't like you. I'm going to say I love dual POV. So I'm going to pick dual POV, but here's my caveat to that. Almost everybody's favorite books, the ones that they like rave about and talk about for eons and eons, are single POV. Fight me.
I always like a dual POV too.
I know, but 50 Shades of Grey, single POV. Almost every trad book that anybody talks about all the time, Kristen, single POV. Everything is always single POV. Like those books are the ones that tend to be the eternal favorites. But I like writing in dual POV, so that's why I'm picking that. But my caveat goes there.
Single parent or fake dating?
Oh, a single parent who is fake dating.
Actually pretty good. Single mom or single dad?
Single mom. I love single moms, guys, but I love single dad too. So I like single mom though. I like writing single mom.
When you wrote Grayson's book, Return to Us, I was so excited because I love your single dads.
I do too. This is a single dad in Forbidden Hearts. So it's a single dad, age gap, nanny. I know. Tingling, aren't you?
While you're writing, do you prefer music or no music?
No music anymore. I used to, my first 8 to 10 books, I wrote only if I had music playing in the background. And then I don't know what happened. It broke me.
But that is it. And you passed all of them except the paperback or the ebook one. But
how did I not pass it? Your paperback,
I do not read on paperback. I don't do audiobooks.
Okay, but do you read on paperback?
Certain books, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Are you annotating now? Because like I'm so jealous of all you guys that are doing the annotating. Can somebody teach me how to do this? Because I've been annotating to help me remember for like 6 months, and it looks like crap because I don't know what I'm supposed to be sticking notes on.
I do it, but it's not like I don't do it on every book.
Mm-hmm. I really are you annotating thing?
If I have the paperbacks, then I would highlight the quotes that I love.
Okay.
That's how I do it.
Like, yeah. I forgot which book. I need to look through my Kindle. I forgot. I read an arc in the ebook, and I highlighted everything that I was like, I freaking loved. And then when I got the paperback, I went and annotated it on the paperback.
It was Keep This Promise, wasn't it? I do have
a bunch of
I know you were highlighting, like you kept telling me which ones you were highlighting. You were like, I highlighted this. She's like, I highlighted the whole damn sex scene.
I won't write on this one. I'm gonna wait until I get the other cover and then I'll do it on that one.
That's smart because
this one I have them showing on my shelf. So if I have the tabs, it's gonna look weird.
Oh yeah.
So I
like people are color coding their tabs like to the book that the aesthetic of the book. I'm like, okay, y'all are like next level amazing. I want to be your besties. And you like
but it sucks because there's not a lot of like those little tabs that sometimes match the cover.
Yeah.
It's so irritating.
Yeah, but I think the more and more that the book world is annotating, the more and more those companies are out there like, the TikTokers are dabbing. TikTokers are dabbing.
Let's make more money.
Make more money. Colored tabs for everyone. Like Skittles, taste the rainbow. Yes.
But thank you so much, Corinne. We love you. And congratulations on this release. It's absolutely phenomenal. I love Holden. And I'm so excited for everything that you have on store for us.
Oh, I love you guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I hope that I answered all your questions. Sometimes we just ramble.
You did. We had fun. And give your baby a big hug for me, because I see pictures of her and I'm just like, oh. And then I laugh when you send me pictures of her cuddling your husband and not you. And I'm like,
oh. She laid with me yesterday and I was so excited. And Brendan was like, I was staring at him like, see, she likes me too. And then he was like, want to come with daddy? And she like gets up. I'm like, oh. I hate you. Why do you hate me so much, dog?
Because you're trying to force her. She wants.
I know. I'm like, please. Does he take you to your doctor's appointments? Does he know what medications you take? Does he have your schedule worked out? Is he waking up at 2 a.m?
But I hope she feels better. And thank you so much. And we'll see you this year in Vegas then.
I can't wait.
Right. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you. Thank you so much to Corinne for being with us today on this episode. It was so fun talking to her. Well, we were not as awkward and as nervous as when we first talked with her. So that's a good thing. And if you haven't picked up the book, Keep This Promise, totally highly recommend it. Go pick it up. It is the third book in the series and the last one. And would you recommend them to read in order? I would think so.
I think it's better
to read. Yeah.
Because if the book ends in a cliffhanger. Well, it ends in a cliffhanger for the next book, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The way it ends, it introduces you to the next book.
Yeah. So highly recommend this whole series. So pick it up if you haven't. Binge read it. And if you missed our announcement on our Instagram page, we do have extra books of You Loved Me Once by Corinne. There are extras and damaged books, so go to our page and go buy one if you want, because I personally love that book so much. I cried so many times in that book. Hopefully we will have time to record another episode. So I don't want to say we'll be back next week, because what if we are busy and don't have time? So hopefully we'll have time for a next episode, and we'll keep you guys updated about our book box and any upcoming author interviews. Hope you guys have a good week and read lots of amazing books. Bye.
Bye.